On this week's edition of New York Now, Democrats push ahead with this year's state budget while Governor Cuomo finds support. We'll have details. Then, Senate Deputy Majority Leader Mike Gianaris joins me with the latest on budget negotiations and where things stand with lawmakers and Cuomo. And later, Keisha Klucke from Bloomberg and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio join me with the latest news and analysis. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass legislation.
We will pass a law prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. It was truly a bizarre week for anyone who follows New York politics, with two very different dynamics at play here. On the one side, you have nearly every leading voice in the Democratic Party calling on Governor Andrew Cuomo to resign over several claims of sexual harassment. Cuomo has denied those claims and said again this week that he's not planning to resign, asking for a chance to show he didn't do what he's accused of doing. But then you have the other side of this, Cuomo's public persona during a major controversy. He held a few public events this week, and if you watched them, you would almost think that things were perfectly normal in New York right now. Here's just a slice of what I'm talking about.
Because today, on With All This Good News, whose birthday is it today?
Hazel.
Happy birthday to you.
But things in New York are very much not normal at the moment, if we even know what normal is anymore. And on top of all of it, the state budget is due at the end of the month, adding another wrinkle to an already complicated situation. Take a look.
The clock is ticking on the state budget in New York. It's due April 1st. That means Democrats have less than 2 weeks to strike a deal on the spending plan, which is expected to ring in at about $200 billion. In past years, leaders from the state Senate and the Assembly would negotiate the budget behind closed doors with Governor Andrew Cuomo. But this year is different. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
I gotta tell you, I miss seeing all of you, you know, seeing these little boxes with names. I do miss actually seeing you all, but this is the best we could do right now until we're in a better place.
The pandemic has forced state budget talks online, with those conversations happening virtually and on the phone. But even without COVID-19, Democrats who lead both chambers of the state legislature probably wouldn't be jumping at the chance to meet with Cuomo right now. Several women have now accused the three-term governor of sexual harassment, and he's also under investigation for his administration's handling of nursing homes. And if you're watching his public appearances, which have now been closed to the press, you wouldn't know it.
The question in life is who gets up, and who gets up stronger, and who gets up smarter, and who gets up faster, and that is New York. That is what we do. That is who we are.
It's hard to ignore the current dynamic between Cuomo and the legislature. Stewart-Cousins has called on Cuomo to resign, and so have a lot of other Democrats, like U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, both from New York. But Stewart-Cousins says she's not expecting that tension to get in the way of this year's state budget.
I think the governor should resign, but I also understand that it is important that we do our job, and that will always be my focus and my conference's focus.
And things aren't any better over in the Assembly, where Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie has opened an impeachment investigation into Cuomo that's expected to look into the sexual harassment claims, but also cover other areas, like decisions related to nursing homes during the pandemic. We don't know how long that probe is going to take, but Hastie said this week that the state budget is still their top priority.
Yes, you know, these things can be distracting, but we still have jobs to do, and we're gonna do those jobs.
Before this week, it was hard to see a political future for Cuomo, who's up for re-election next year. But a new poll from Siena College this week showed half of New Yorkers don't want Cuomo to resign over the sexual harassment claims. And a coalition of well-known civil rights leaders stood with Cuomo this week and praised him for the state's recent criminal justice reforms and his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. Former Congressman Charlie Rangel addressed the claims against Cuomo directly, offering his support for the governor while he's under investigation.
Is this the same country that says that you can make any allegation that you want to make, but due process and a hearing is basically what we believe in this country.
Uh-huh. Cuomo also got a boost from the White House this week. President Joe Biden said he isn't calling on Cuomo to resign just yet, instead deferring judgment until a separate investigation from the New York Attorney General's office is over. But if the allegations are confirmed, Biden said, Cuomo should step down and could even be prosecuted.
If the investigation confirms the claims of the women, should he resign?
Yes, I think he'd probably end up being prosecuted, too.
In the meantime, both the state Senate and the Assembly released their own proposals for the state budget this week, and both are seeking to raise taxes for people who make more than $1 million a year and make other changes also targeted at the rich. Income taxes wouldn't go up for middle-income New Yorkers.
We're obviously asking those who have more to help more in maintaining this recovery.
Democrats say those plans could raise more than $8 billion for the state. But Republicans are against the tax hikes, saying New York could lose a huge chunk of tax revenue if the rich decide to relocate.
It'll have the unintended consequence of decimating our tax base because Democrats fail to ever acknowledge the real truth, that our state's tax base is hugely dependent on high-income earners.
It's not just Republicans who feel that way. Cuomo issued the same warning this week.
How you raise revenue can actually raise revenue or can cost you revenue. If you're not careful the way you do it, you may actually lose money for the state because businesses and residences will make changes.
And Republicans also argue that the state doesn't need more tax revenue. Congress just sent the state government $12.5 billion as part of the latest stimulus package. Some economic analysts say that would wipe out the state's budget gap and then some. But Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie said this week that it's not so much about filling the deficit as it is about long-term investments.
And one of the reasons why we felt like we needed to do the revenue raises because we need to start to make investments if this state is really going to recover from this pandemic.
Lawmakers are also planning to raise state aid for schools, funnel money into infrastructure, and more. The state budget is due at the end of March.
And the Senate and the Assembly are pretty much in sync on how they want to do the state budget this year, with a few very small exceptions. That could make this year's state budget easier than past years, but we don't really know how the Cuomo factor is going to change things. And then there's the question of how will things shake out after the budget with Cuomo in the legislature? I spoke about that and more this week with Senate Deputy Majority Leader Mike Gianaris. Deputy Majority Leader Gianaris, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Dan.
So the Assembly and the Senate have their One House budgets out this week. It's basically a rebuttal to what the governor proposed in January, and now you'll negotiate until the end of March when the budget is due. And both the Senate and the Assembly seem pretty aligned on raising taxes on the rich. Meanwhile, Congress has given the state $12.5 billion as part of the latest stimulus package. So tell me why you still want to raise those taxes on the wealthy here in New York.
Well, there's a couple things going on. We had a massive budget gap coming into this process because of the economic shutdown, the slowdown in revenues. So step one was fill the budget gap. The federal aid largely does that. Not entirely, by the way, but largely does that. And then that leaves the remaining gap, but also all the programs that we need to do to help people recover from the pandemic. And so when we talk about rent relief, both for tenants, residential tenants and commercial tenants, that's additional spending that wasn't previously in the budget. When we talk about the help for excluded workers, people who were not eligible for all the federal aid that came to folks over the last year, that's an additional piece as well. When we talk about grants to small businesses to keep them thriving and open, we've lost many of them already, that is additional help that's needed. In addition to the needs that the state always has in the form of education, healthcare, higher education. So there are needs beyond just keeping the budget where it was. So yes, the federal government helps us kind of fill the hole in large part, but there are all these programs we need to implement that require additional revenue. The other thing I would say is that the federal aid is coming once and then it's disappearing. And so all the things that we're going to use that money for, we're trying to come up with sources of revenue that are recurring. So it's not just kicking the can down the road to next year or the year after when we run out of money yet again.
Republicans and some analysts have said over the years that raising taxes on the rich may drive them out of the state. So instead of getting some of their tax revenue, we're getting none of their tax revenue. What would you say to those concerns? It's been one that we've heard for decades now, and obviously we've done some tax increases in the meantime.
Yeah, you put your finger on it. This is the same old complaint we hear every time anyone talks about asking the rich to do more. Over a decade ago, during the Great Recession, when we imposed a millionaire's tax in New York State, we heard the same complaints. And lo and behold, the data doesn't back that up. So you can't just sit there and say this is going to happen without real data to support your claim. And the data shows the opposite. Sure, people leave because people always leave. More people come in. New York has seen a net increase of millionaires in the last decade since we imposed a tax on the high-earning individuals during the Great Recession. So all the information we have goes in the opposite direction. The fact is we've had a tremendous amount of suffering from a huge majority of the population, and we're asking those who earn more than $1 million a year to do more because they actually did well. All the indicators are that the wealthy got even wealthier over the last year. And the fair thing to do is ask them to fund the recovery to get us back to where we would like to be.
So on the other side of the economic scale are people that lost income during the pandemic. And I'm thinking of tenants specifically. You and I have talked about relief for tenants in the form of canceling rent. There are a bunch of different proposals out there. But I'm curious, in the One House budget for the Senate, what kind of relief do you have for tenants? I know it's been a priority for Democrats in the Senate.
Yeah, and this is an exciting proposal in our One House. We had a program back last year which was inadequate. It was $100 million in relief. The problem is so much more vast than that. The way to apply was very burdensome for the tenants, so many weren't even doing it. But in the One House, we have an excess of $2.3 billion for rent relief, which just about covers the rent arrears that are estimated to exist throughout the state. And so we could pay all outstanding rent with this program if it appears in the final budget. And so that would not only help the tenants who owe money, but then the landlords would be receiving that money. So rather than just saying no one has to pay, we're paying it for them. That way the small landlords get their money, they get to keep paying their mortgages and their utilities, and hopefully people stay in their homes and we get back to a more normal state of play.
You know, the governor's office has been not so keen on tax hikes for the rich and not so keen on canceling rent. And I know that they've wanted to provide rent relief, but I'm wondering, in terms of the dynamics, do you think, because of the investigation surrounding the governor this year, do you think that's going to make the budget easier for you guys because the governor may want to make more concessions? Or do you think it'll make it harder because there's just not as much communication?
Well, it remains to be seen. This is an unprecedented situation. What I can tell you is both the Senate and the Assembly are working hard to be in sync. These One House proposals are closer together than any I've ever seen in my time in the legislature. We were talking with our colleagues in the other House as we developed our plans. So to the extent we can come forward with a unified approach, that can only help. We don't know what level of engagement the governor is going to have. We don't know if the governor is going to be around at the end of the month, to be honest. Many of us have called for his resignation already. So what we are doing is focusing on the need to get something done as it relates to the budget. We have a great negotiating partner in the Assembly. Now that the One Houses are done, we'll see what kind of engagement we get from the executive.
So let's talk about that. The Assembly has opened an impeachment investigation now. If they do move forward with impeachment, the Senate would then hold a trial where the governor would either be acquitted or convicted. Do you have any sense right now in the Senate in terms of how people feel about a conviction for impeachment? In other words, if the trial was held tomorrow, do you think that he would be convicted by the Senate?
Well, I want to be careful because we would be sitting in judgment of what impeachment articles the Assembly would pass. And until that happens, I don't know what exactly specifically we'd be judging. We obviously know what scandals are being reported on a regular basis. We know what the Attorney General is investigating. But I don't want to prejudge something that I might be asked to look at down the road. But what I can tell you is we have a vast majority of the Senate that has already deemed the governor unfit at this time, calling for his resignation. A very large majority of the Democrats in the Senate, and I believe all the Republicans would be there. So that gives you an indication of how the Senate views things.
I imagine this is going to be a tough situation if the governor does not resign and he's not impeached, because the majority of Democrats in the legislature have called on him to step aside in some form. If he stays in office and he doesn't leave before the end of his term next year, do you see a future where Democrats in the legislature can effectively work with the governor?
So much of this is unprecedented. It's hard to say. Right now, the Assembly is having an impeachment investigation. They can decide to pass an impeachment article or not. and then it would come to us in the Senate. I'm trying to focus on what's in our control right now, and we're trying to get a budget done in the next 2 weeks. If this drags on longer than that, obviously the Attorney General's investigation is going to come forward. There are other law enforcement entities that are aware of some of these allegations. There may be other allegations. We don't know, because every day brings another development. So I guess it's a long way of saying I'm not really sure long term how we're going to deal with this, or if we would need to deal with it, but we'll tackle that as it comes.
You are a leading voice in the Democratic Party. You lead the campaign arm of the state Senate Democrats. And obviously we have the election for governor next year. If he doesn't resign and he wants to run for a fourth term, do you think that Democrats in the state should try to coalesce around a different candidate to try to compete against him in a primary and maybe replace him in the office?
We've always tried to focus on our own elections in the Senate. We've obviously done very well. We have the largest majority that's ever existed in state history for either party. And we've done that by keeping our heads down, recruiting great candidates, supporting great incumbents, and focusing on our elections. We went through many years when the governor wasn't even on our side in these elections. So we've learned how to operate independently of the top of the ticket. And if he still tries to run, I guess there'll be a primary before we even get to November. So there's a lot of steps from here to there, and we'll see where it goes.
Right. Quite a bit can happen in a year. That's when the governor will be elected next year. But until then, thanks for joining me, Senate Deputy Majority Leader Mike Gianaris.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
All right, lots to talk about with this week's panel. Joining me this week are Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio and Keisha Kuki from Bloomberg. Thank you both for being here.
Glad to be here.
So first, I want to talk about the Assembly hiring a law firm this week to lead its impeachment investigation. There was some controversy over it. The law firm is Polk, Davis, and Wardwell, and it basically has ties to, in some respect, Cuomo aides. Karen, can you explain what's going on here?
Well, yes, it has ties to the state's chief judge, Janet DeFiore, who, if there is an impeachment trial, would preside over the trial. Her husband was a partner in this firm for 30 years, and Cuomo has appointed him to various boards at SUNY, a casino siting board. So the attorney for one of the women, Charlotte Bennett, said this raises red flags. Is this going to be a conflict of interest that there's ties to Cuomo in this law firm? And Speaker Hastie kind of doubled down on it, said, no, I think it's going to be fair. You know, we vetted this law firm. They're the best law firm to use. I mean, part of it is, New York City is a big city, but the political world is a small world.
Right.
And I think you are going to find some connections. But that's the question with the Assembly Speaker. Is he stalling by having this long impeachment investigation with maybe a politically connected firm, or are they serious about getting on with actually finding evidence? And there was a leaked Assembly Democratic meeting this week that caused kind of a ruckus that showed that the conference, the Democratic members are split over that. Some say, why don't we just get to impeachment? You're stalling. And others like Speaker Hastie say, well, it's all about due process.
You know, just because I covered law before, and Keisha's covered a lot, Bloomberg Law, obviously, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really tough to find a law firm that doesn't have ties either to the Cuomo administration or to Democrats in the Assembly or somewhere in the respect of the state court system. So it's just like, to me, mm-hmm. I think that you're going to have that supposed conflict. And I should say, I said a top aide to Cuomo. The chief judge is obviously not a top aide to Cuomo. She is the highest appointed judge.
But she actually had been a top aide to Cuomo.
Yes, yes.
She ran his ethics commission. Well, I say his. It's the state ethics commission, but everybody knows
it
Cuomo controls
is.
It. So, yeah, so actually she does have ties. But you're right. And certainly these big so-called white shoe law firms, people shuffle in and out of them. They get a job there for a while. They're kind of a rainmaker. They get clients. They go back out into public service. So it is kind of a revolving door. We've seen many examples of that.
Right.
And it could be interesting, too, because they could use, depending on the timing, so the state constitution in terms of impeachment is, like, very vague, hasn't been used since 1913, so no one living knows what happened, you know, was there to talk about the law behind it. And so the timing of it is going to be really interesting. If the AG's report comes out beforehand, perhaps that could be used as opposed to this separate investigation. But I think it depends on what all of them find. It is interesting to note that the Assembly investigation is supposed to be wider than just the the sexual harassment allegations. It's going to go into nursing homes and any other. It could be a wide swath of
also the Mario M. Cuomo bridge questions about mm-hmm. whether it's structurally sound is brought up in an article by the Times Union. So yeah, there's a lot there. How long does that take to get all those facts? I mean, it seems like it could take months.
Yeah, I'm thinking summer is going to be, you know, where it's at. And then the question is, you know, does the governor stay in office until then?
And even with the Assembly's impeachment investigation, with Mike Gianaris, the interview that aired before this segment on the show, he made a good point that when the Assembly, if they do impeach the governor, they have to say, like in their impeachment resolution or the articles of impeachment, why they are passing it. So then that might be a determinative factor of what happens in the Senate when they hold the trial. For example, if they only impeach him in the Assembly, say, because of nursing home stuff, and maybe not the majority of the Senate agrees with that impeachment resolution, he could be acquitted at the end of the day. So there are just like a lot of moving parts.
Exactly, exactly. And that's why, you know, there's some credence to maybe some members in the Assembly wanting to stall for time because, well, maybe this will blow over and we don't have to do this.
Right, exactly. Also this week, Cuomo is now holding these strange events without press and without a Q&A. He held I don't want to call it a press conference because there were no press there and there was not a Q&A.
Yeah, but what do you call that?
Exactly. It's like, I think Tom Precious or somebody tweeted that it was like a video press release, which I think is an excellent descriptor of it. Karen, what do you make of this strategy that the governor is using now? He's obviously dodging us for a reason. Yeah, we're asking questions that he does not like.
He's in a lot of trouble, and he has these carefully staged events where it shows like he's in control. Everybody loves him. He went to Harlem and had some top African-American leaders, the NAACP president, Hazel Dukes, former Congressman Charlie Rangel, saying really nice things about him. As I think we saw earlier in the show, he presented her with a birthday cake.
Hazel Dukes was the one that the governor was singing happy birthday to, in case that context was missing.
Yeah,
was
and they had this kind of a love fest and like a campaign rally, and you know, Cuomo talked about his achievements, and you know, I think if he presents kind of that facade, he's thinking, well, maybe these charges, they'll go away, and if I look like I'm governing and everybody likes me, then I can keep, you know, going and, you know, still be governor. I you know, I don't know how far he's going to get with that, but he's certainly given it a good try, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, and he also has the support of, like you said, Charlie Rangel was there, and he actually not only, most of them were just in general, like, we support what Cuomo's doing, we like his you know, COVID leadership skills, and they didn't really touch on the allegations, but Charlie Rangel did.
He
was like, you know, when people are coming at you, you look to your family and friends to go behind you, which is a very strong, you know, support for Cuomo. And I think he's showing this power that he wields in the state, right? Like he's a very powerful man. You know, he's lived here. His father's lived here. Hazel Dukes was saying my son, and he was calling her my second mother. You know, it just shows how strong it is and how almost like a warning to people coming out, right? Mm-hmm. Like look at all these people behind me and you're going to cross me. And just kind of engaging with, we also had the New York Mets, the Yankees. There was, you know, there was all kinds of people coming out up and behind him at these video press releases.
It's a strange strategy, but probably one that is going to be effective in some way, shape, or form.
And the baseball owners do kind of need him because he was granting them permission to essentially make money at their stadiums by allowing fans in, so they kind of, you know, really had an interest there in being part of it. And that was another strange event. A lot of jokes, a lot of everything's just fine, and you know, we're just having a fun time here, everything's great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's just definitely a different reality than what, you know, the rest of New York State government and politics are experiencing right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Before we run out of time, there is a debate going on in the legislature right now over marijuana legalization. The Senate Majority Leader said this week that they had reached an impasse because of basically driving while intoxicated. How do you detect that if somebody is taking the drug? How do you prosecute that? Things like that. Keisha, you've been on the ground covering this very closely. Where do things stand with marijuana right now?
Yes, we're definitely very interested in the details, particularly, you know, the taxes, the tax revenue. I've been told that they've come to some sort of an agreement on those by a few sources, but this legal issue is a major problem. I mean, to the point where last Friday they were saying, we're definitively coming out with this next week. We're going to have a bill. We're going to vote on it. We're taking it out of the budget. We're doing it separately. And then now they're like, hopefully we'll have a bill at some point before the budget comes out, which is a pretty big change. At this point, I'm hearing, you know, any point today into the weekend, but they're really stuck on this and whether to move forward with legislation or to have maybe some sort of a task force.
Well, has anybody really resolved the issue of how you test someone if they're essentially high?
Yes, they have actually.
Okay, because the last time that I was reporting on it, I know it was still a debate of how you do it.
A professor from Canada reached out to me this week about this, and they use machines up there that are basically like breathalyzers. The problem being that each machine costs $5,000.
Wow.
And if you know local police departments in New York State, they do not have $5,000 to spend per police vehicle to do something like this. They just don't have the money.
The governor's always been pretty stingy with AIDS localities anyway, so that would be a huge investment they'd have to make an accommodation.
You don't want to raise local taxes because then it's like, how do you get the support from the people at that point? But we're out of time, unfortunately. Marijuana is something that I could talk about for another 30 minutes, but we're out of time. Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, Keisha Kuki from Bloomberg, thank you both so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you all for joining me this week for this week's New York Now. We'll see you next week right here on your local PBS station. Be well.